today I'm very excited and privileged to be with a young lady by the name of Faith Popcorn. I'm sure you're familiar with her if you've read anything on marketing. I believe it was Fortune magazine called her the Nostradamus of marketing. And she has a New York Times bestseller called The Popcorn Report. And she's the founder of Brain Reserve, which is really, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it's a consulting firm to some of the biggest Fortune 500 companies around, everything from American Express, IBM, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble. And her unique ability to look at the future and bring it back to today and give companies and I think individuals guidance on what to do today to create a brighter future has made her an incredible success. And we're really, really thrilled to be with you today. Thanks for having me. We're here on 1 Madison Avenue here in New York City looking out across at the Empire State Building.
Right.
Thanks for being with us, Faith.
Thank you for asking me.
Listen, I thought we might start, as we usually do in our Power Talks, a little bit of your background, because I think that gives us a little bit of an idea of what shaped you and who you are today. How does somebody become a trend analyst, a predictor of the future, a consultant to Fortune 500 companies? What is your background and what shaped you?
Well, I think my background doesn't have that much to do with it, really.
Really?
I don't know. I was brought up in Manhattan. I spent my early years in Shanghai. My father was head of the like the CID there. It's like the CIA with the American Army in the 40s. And I was brought up on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And I guess I was always a watcher. You know, I guess when you don't feel that you fit very well, you're different. You become a voyeur.
Yes.
And when you become a voyeur, you see a lot of things maybe people don't see, or you see things, you see patterns that people don't see because they're busy living them.
Yes.
I don't know if I live them as much as observe them. So I saw themes, maybe, and it helped me interpret what was going on around me, gave me a feeling that I had a little more control, and also helped me figure out how to advise other people. I was always the best friend that advised my friends. So that, and then I got into advertising. I was a writer and a creative director. And then I realized that in advertising, we weren't really servicing the client enough. I felt to really service the client, you needed to give him advice, not a commercial.
Right.
And the advice I felt that clients needed was a view of what was going to happen to him or her.
Yes.
So we figured out a methodology to figure out the future. And what we do every day is take our clients, which are mainly Fortune 500 clients, and place them, it's very satisfying, in the proper place in the future with the right products, the right strategies. So they're facing it with a lot more confidence because they know what to do. They know what to bring out. They know how to behave. They know what to take off the market. They know what to expect. So, you know, in military strategy, and you know probably more than I do, surprise is the key problem.
Yeah.
And if a person's or a company's not surprised by any event, they pretty much know how to handle it.
Well, you give them the certainty that almost all individuals and organizations want. Take away the fear of the unknown.
Right.
But I want to come back for a second, if I may, because in reading your book and some articles on you, you related quite a bit about your grandparents living here in New York and how that shaped you a bit. Maybe you can touch on that.
Well, my grandparents really raised me because my parents were both lawyers and they were busy working.
Yes.
My father was a criminal lawyer, my mother a negligence lawyer. And my grandparents had, my grandfather really had a men's clothing store, haberdashery store, on 5th Street and 2nd Avenue. And when I was real little, and it's still a favorite thing of mine to do is to sit on the street. I love to sit on, there's not too many streets you can sit on these days. And sit on the street and kind of watch people look into the window.
Yes.
And if they looked into the window, we knew we had a good window. If they sort of passed it by, we'd run in there and rearrange.
Yes.
And that help me understand that it's not what you've got, but how you present it being more important.
Yes.
And really, it was a very early lesson in positioning. Also, there was such a diverse neighborhood. Everybody spoke, my grandmother spoke about 7 languages.
Wow.
And really could communicate with a whole host of different people and a host of different cultures. So she could, she had some buildings down there. You know, she could collect rents from anybody.
Has this helped you in your business?
I'm a pretty good money collector.
That's good.
It's pretty easy to collect money. All you have to do is tell people you really need it.
Interesting. Well, you used it, I've seen in many interviews, you've mentioned a metaphor that you use a lot that you picked up from your grandmother, and you seem very proud of it. I'm curious what it means to you. You talk about being a cowgirl of the East Side. What does that mean to you?
Oh, well, my grandmother always said walk tall, because it was a little dangerous down there. You know, there were a lot of gangs down there at that time. There's somebody, a gang called the Fordham Baldies. It was very rough kind of neighborhood. And there were Italians, Puerto Ricans were just starting to come in. And we felt very safe in that neighborhood, mainly because my uncles and my grandmother, and we grew up with the police force. We literally grew up with them. We knew them. And felt very friendly. It was a very different feeling than today, where you feel so adverse to authority. Uh-huh. And so diverse from it. And also, I guess we believe that if we just stared straight ahead and like walked tall, nothing bad would happen to us. And let me tell you, that has served me extremely well on some very dark streets in New York.
Well, one of the things I teach is the power of physiology to communicate.
So there you go. You believe in that.
I certainly believe in that 100%. Tell me, you alluded to being a little rough in the future. You talk about a socioquake mm-hmm. coming. What's your view of the future?
Well, my view of the socioquake part of the future is that things are on its head. That's why we call it socioquake. The ethics are in trouble. The environment's in trouble. The educational system is in trouble. How many more things could be in trouble?
Yeah.
There's a raging disease in America today called AIDS. People don't look at it as that, but it is. It is. And when everything's sort of turned over that way, people start to look at things a little differently. They're not looking. It's like Gumby being held up by its feet. His feet. I like Gumby. You know, I think he's a good person.
He's flexible. That helps.
He's flexible and he's a little bit wild and he expresses himself pretty well. And he's green. This is key. It's important. So anyway, when people are like upside down, you know, if you ever want to get a different point of view, you stand on your head. It does give you a different point of view. So I think the society is basically standing on its head.
Hmm.
If you've ever gone on one of those rides in an amusement park, and I think we're reacting a lot differently to the same, and you mentioned this earlier, the same input.
Yes.
We're reacting differently to because of the socioquake.
Yes.
So mainly at one time, if you saw a homeless person on the street, you would have helped them. Now you see too many, so you walk by them. But maybe that makes you help your neighbor or your sister or your brother.
Yes.
Or a small child.
Yes.
You know, people are adopting families. I think they're being more generous in a way. They're giving more to charity. Things are moving around a lot. We realize that the corporation that we so depended on and we encouraged our kids to work for the same company as I did, that's gone because the corporation screwed us badly, fired us. The big dad has really deserted us and not provided the security it promised as we grew up. So now we're starting to depend more on ourselves, more on the family unit. That's where I got the concept cocooning from.
Yes.
Really.
And
there's
I should have said in the very beginning is that, you know, you created that whole concept.
Yes.
Now, people knew that information. They knew people were starting to try and come in and go home, but you found a way to articulate it in a way that the whole culture is using.
Well, when I named cocooning, you have to understand it was 1982. Nobody was going home. It was a prediction.
Interesting.
And the prediction was based on a wear out. We do 3,000 one-on-one interviews with consumers a year just to get a little nice touch base, you know, see what's going on.
Right.
And we sensed that although people were going out and having drug, sex, and rock and roll, they were tired. And they wished they could stay home, but they couldn't. They just had to keep up the front. And we predicted that they would just one day, like, sort of fall over and stay home as they got older and wanted to have kids. We heard the yearning, the desire.
Yes.
That's when we predicted cocooning. So it was very useful for our clients to know that home services, home delivery, all that sort of thing would be a way to really leverage the future. And I guess that's what we do at Brain Reserve. It always sounds strange when we say it because it's the future. But if you can believe it, you can leverage it. And that means you can bring out the right products, the right services. That's kind of what we do for our clients. So they go, oh, no, this couldn't possibly be going to happen. They always say that.
Why do you think most people, I talked to a lot of people about the future, and a lot of people, a large number of people, I think, have a lot of fear about the future. What do you think is creating that?
The past. What people do, and it's a great era, is that they project in a linear way from the past to the future.
Right.
It's not at all how things happen. We take a snapshot and project our way back into two-year increments. So we get sort of a vision, not so much on emotion or really like temperature of the country, not so much on that, based on technology and, you know, some pretty strong directions that you know are just going to continue.
Yes.
So we take this little picture and then we work our way back and get a very different snapshot than projecting from the past.
Now, when you do that, you're tapping into your brain reserve or your group of people that
talent
you develop.
Talent bank.
Talent bank, as you call it. Which is like 2,500, is that my understanding?
Yeah, that's right. These are experts.
Yes.
These are people that are astronauts or they're engineers, they're doctors, they're alternative healthcare people, meaning they're aromatherapists or they're acupuncturists or they're meditation experts like Bernie Siegel. Or,
sure.
And we brainstorm with them. We go, like, American Indians, they're very interesting because I think they really truly have psychic powers and they have had for centuries.
They're certainly tied into nature.
Very much. And they get their information from nature. They predicted all this, you know. They predicted the water problem, the air problem. It's all in their history. So we get them, we brainstorm with them, and they really help us open up our thinking.
What kind of questions do you ask these people?
Well, it depends on what we're working on. Now, sometimes we just work, we'll work on water. So we'll get a whole bunch of people in the room and go, what's going to happen to water? And then you hear a whole bunch of stuff. Hmm. You see, you hear that there's someone, like Jacques Cousteau was telling us, the floor of the ocean is so filthy and it's really a problem. We can't keep dumping in there and everything's getting sick down there. You know, when you read like a little article that says don't eat salmon more than once a month. And I mean, it's just so horrible.
Jeez.
And to think that nobody did this to us, we did this to ourselves and we can undo it, but we're not. When we start to hear this kind of stuff, we could say to a company, you know, bottled water, yes, but those sources may be poisoned too. You know, let's get into some kind of new kind of filtration. You see, you could come up with an idea about that. Let's get into little testing units where a mother or father can go to the supermarket and look at a fish and put his testing unit on the fish and it could register red through green depending on it's a safe fish.
Interesting. Tell me, what is the difference for you between, what is a trend, first of all, and what's the difference between a trend and a fad? I know time is one of the criteria.
Well, a trend must have 10 years
okay,
for us
years.
To call it a trend. A fad could be 36 months,
okay.
could be
so
six months.
So it could last as much as three, 6 months
You can
months
make a lot
years.
Of money on a fad if you know how to get out. Our clients are too big to get in and get out.
Right.
A smaller, more entrepreneurial company could make a fortune on a fad.
Interesting.
They get in, they get out. Phase up fast, phase down fast. But, you know, big companies can't do that. Also, it's how many people observe it between a trend and a fad. A trend is really everybody, from middle class up, not poverty level, not up, upper class sometimes. Now, a fad is a smaller group of people, smaller
okay.
amount of geographic
location.
It could
location. Be college kids, for example.
That's
it could
right.
be, okay. Interesting. Why do you think an individual, we're talking a lot about companies, mm-hmm. but why is it important for an individual to study the future, in your opinion?
It'll tell you where to live, what business to go into, what to push your kids into in terms of their education. It'll tell you how you're going to be feeling. It'll tell you what stocks to buy. Hmm. I mean, why not?
Hmm. And how would you promote that to an individual? Let's say I want to really study trends as an individual. What would you tell me to do?
Well, you know, the Popcorn Report at the end of the book says, call me, fax me, write me, beam me up, whatever.
Yes.
So nobody's beamed me up yet. But a lot of people have written us, and they're individuals, they're not corporations. They say, God, this helped me. I'm a truck driver, and I drive through the peanut farms in Georgia. And every day I drive through these peanut farms, and all of a sudden I got this idea for a new peanut butter. And I started to make it and package it and position it. And I have my own company now. It's a book for individuals to leverage the future. It's not a book about big companies leveraging the future.
Yeah, that was my impression. Let's talk about some of the trends
okay.
that you discovered then. The first one we've already mentioned, but let's talk about what's causing it. The whole concept of cocooning and maybe eventually burrowing, as you talk about,
right.
and clanning. Why don't you describe what's really the cause of this and where is it going to go?
Well, cocooning is, the cause is fear and uncertainty. And when
yes.
people feel unsure in the world, they go home and they pull the covers over their head. And that's what's causing it. The fear is growing, you know. So people are doing it more, and they want comfort at home. The more they're at home, the more they notice a crack in the wall or that they don't have the right kind of food or equipment or the tape player's not working properly or whatever. So they are starting to really create a safe, secure, technically correct environment at home, ethically correct.
Hmm.
And they're really revering the family unit. And when I say burrowing, I'm saying that families like families, and this is a little scary, are starting to live near each other and form cocoon communities.
Interesting.
And looking for home delivery, child care, in terms of one person taking care of everybody's kids, that kind of thing.
Is it primarily because they feel the outside world is so harsh, it's polluted, it's expensive, you know, they
yes.
can't count on their jobs, so they're moving away from the pain to a place they feel they can control, in essence?
Yes, people are getting up Monday morning with dread. And soon we're not going to be able to drive every day because of the pollution, so that's going to even sock in more, which leads you to that other trend, which is way down on the list, cashing out,
right,
which says people will start to, 450,000 people did it last year, open their own home businesses.
Yes.
And not either linked to a big company or not, but want to keep it more enclosed. When things get rough, people should really be marching, going to Washington and pushing for a leader. But human nature doesn't work that way.
Well, it's interesting. It has at times, though. What do you think? What do you think makes the difference there? We talked before we got on tape a little bit about that.
People marched because they weren't scared; they were angry.
Interesting.
Now they're scared.
What do you think the difference is? Why are they scared now?
Because they lost their jobs, or someone that very close to them lost their jobs. Because they don't understand why the economy can go up, can go down. They don't understand. They always thought President Papa President, I call him, would take care of everything. He hasn't.
Yes. You know, we talked a little bit before we got on tape about Robert Prechter, but I'm curious, what do you think of the possibility that human beings as creatures go through cycles of moods, cycles of focus where the focus is primarily on what's wrong versus cycles where they're looking primarily what's up? Because as I shared with you, Robert and the Elliott Wave Theory talk about how we as a society can have the same events occurring. But when one person takes that horrible event and they look at it and say, how can I make use of this? How can we turn it around? Somebody else says, oh my gosh, it's going to destroy the world. Do you believe that that's part of human nature? Or is that something that can be tracked? What do you believe about that?
I think it's hard to track it, but I do think there are grand schemes.
Yes.
I really do. I think it's the way we receive information. I agree with him on that one. You get up in the morning, you're feeling great. Things fall around you, buildings fall around you, you know, you just step over it.
Yes.
And that is really true about human nature. If this country got together and said, we're going to, and I see it happening, but there is a Buy American underground that's fabulous. Now all that has to happen is the manufacturers have to, like, keep up with it and make something decent that doesn't fall apart.
Yes.
But the individual, as you know, I talk about that a lot in the Popcorn Report, can create the future, can change it, can create it. So I do believe in corporate moods, country moods, worldwide moods. Mm-hmm. I think because maybe it's a male-dominated legislature, moods are very downplayed. But I think, we don't think in terms of moods in a male culture.
Yes.
But I think moods really do direct the cycles, which is a female thing, and moods really do direct the nature of the world.
Interesting. How much do you think the media plays a role? You know, I have a formula I use, which I say is information times focus equals personal reality. You know, that your reality that you experience personally, you know, I think you describe most people in life live in a box. They're at home sitting on a couch watching a box. They're in a box doing it. They get in their box car to drive to a box office to sit, you know, in their little box room. I think that most people are getting a certain amount of information in, and then it's not just the information you receive, but which of it you focus on determines how you feel and how you experience. How much do you think the media creates a trend versus acknowledges or reports on it?
I think they can push a trend.
Okay.
I don't think they create it.
Interesting.
People think we create trends. It's absolutely wildly, crazily wrong.
Yes.
You can support it, you can push it, you can get it noticed. Maybe you can get more people on it earlier than they would have been on it originally.
Yes.
But I don't think they create it.
My personal belief is that change, and I think you know, you read my book and wrote me that note, comes from either pain or pleasure. But those are the driving, organizing principles behind all human behavior. We've all found a different way to get out of pain and into pleasure. I look at something like cashing out, and I see the change process myself, and I'd be curious to see if you agree, disagree, or have a different view, that people get enough pain usually, that's what drives them more often, that they finally begin to ask new questions. Is this really worth it? You know, all this driving myself crazy, working as hard as I am, am I getting enough reward for this situation? What's happening with my family? In other words, they get enough pain that they actually stop to ask some questions instead of just staying in their momentum. And out of those questions, they begin to find a cause. Out of that cause, maybe they start to say, well, what are my alternatives? And as they look for alternatives, they try one out. If it gets reinforced, they develop a new belief and new futures, new trends. What is your belief? I look at these trends and I see cocooning being driven by pain. I see cashing out being driven by pain. I look at the whole idea of fantasy adventure, which we should touch on.
Delivered by pain.
Yeah, delivered by pain. Is that theme consistent?
I would agree with that.
Interesting.
A lot of these are trends where we're pulling our hand out of the fire, basically.
Yes.
And cashing out, when you go to work every day and you're humiliated, or you're not supported, or you're not encouraged, and you don't have a job that you think makes change, you're just like sort of treading water.
No sense of contribution.
No, keeping your boss happy.
Yeah.
You want to get out.
Yeah.
And when you see a way to get out, you run, you jump off. And even if the way is to get fired, I think half of these people got themselves fired. I mean, they saw these packages that were off, and they go, I'm getting out of here. This is my shot.
Interesting.
Small indulgences is also a pain trend, if you want to look at it from that view.
Yes.
Because it says that when things get rough, you want to eat an ice cream pop, and you want it to be the most expensive one. So it's like a
Clarify that. Why? Why do we want to do the most expensive one? What does that
say? Just makes us feel good. You know, gee, we can't buy a house, but we can buy a $2 Haagen-Dazs bar.
Or a Waterman pen.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
So we just get a little pleasure.
So let's talk about some of these trends so we give people an idea, because I want to make sure they pick up your book and study it in detail. But the second major trend you talked about after cocooning was this whole idea of fantasy adventure. And let's talk about what does that really mean?
Well, that's another one. It's not real adventure. It's not getting out and climbing a real rock. It's going to your gym and climbing, scaling a scaling wall. It's why salsa did $600 million last year.
Now, how does that tie to adventure?
Because there's a little something hot in your mouth. These fantasy adventures, small, safe adventures. It's like these dumb canals that run around hotels where you jump in a boat.
Yes.
It's like Disney World. Nothing bad's going to happen. You have a moment of your heart beats a little faster. It's extremely safe, extremely contained. And virtual reality, which is that computer that you saw in Total Recall,
yes,
has headphones and a glove and eye goggles, and you look at this computer and you feel like you're there.
Yes.
That's going to be developed really strongly. If I had to put my money on any stock, it would be any stock that had to do with virtual reality. Because we believe that there'll be rooms in every home, virtual reality rooms, where you can come in and get pleasure. Take me to Africa. And by the way, I want to go with Paul Newman. So you're going to have a hologram and a virtual reality kind of combo where you're going to believe you're there with Paul Newman. Paul's going to be saying to you, oh, you know, hey, Tony, look at this. You know, it's going to be a complete fantasy. And unfortunately, and what's scary, they also said this about television in the 50s,
yes,
is that people are going to spend more and more time in those rooms.
What happens to our society when we get addicted to that? Why do we come out? You know, why do we even come out of that? Now, you're talking about the ultimate cocoon. We're talking about the cocoon no longer in the home, but in somebody's head. What's going to bring us back out?
I don't know.
That's interesting. Well, you're not very reassuring, Faith. Now, your name, Faith Popcorn, I know that that's that name that you've developed as a way to communicate certain feelings and emotions and to get people's attention is one of your better marketing tools, and I think it represents your attitudes very well. My question for you, though, is you have a very positive view of the future, and so far we haven't led people onto that in this conversation. Maybe before we go through more trends, what do we have to look forward in this future? Some people at this point might be saying, boy, it sounds like a pretty scary future to me.
I think interpersonal relationships will save us.
Hmm.
You know? I think we're going to want to be with people, so we're going to come out of the room. You know?
Yeah.
It's just not going to be enough. And
ultimately, we need the human touch.
Yes, and I think kids are going to be a big help here. I believe that kids will be linked up all over the planet. I say it in the book through the Nintendo or something like it, where they're going to talk to each other in symbology, and they're going to start to save the oceans, and they're going to really save their own future. Because in this generation, the parents have done a horrible job about creating a safe place for the children they leave behind. They're not thinking about that.
Yes.
So I believe in people. And I don't think people are going to want to be holed up in that room forever.
Right.
And I don't think people are going to be wanting to live in a horrible society forever. And when you look at Russia, you look at Gorbachev, I mean, he sacrificed his life for this.
Yeah.
That's why I believe in people, you know. The communists fell. It's amazing. The German wall fell. People are good and people are evil. It's those big themes like in Batman.
Hmm.
And they continue.
So what do you see that's positive for the future besides relationship? You think those relationships will deepen at a level that our society will come out of the room and will begin to grow again, expand again? Is this the natural flow of expansion and contraction that we see throughout the world, throughout
the
universe?
Yes, and I think men and women are going to start to communicate better.
Well, what a concept,
already,
huh?
Yeah, it's already starting to really happen.
Interesting.
You know, realizing that we're both people, maybe different kinds of people, and trying to, like, interact. That's going to be exciting. Also, monogamy is starting to be exciting. It comes from a bad reason, which is like we're afraid not to be. That's not the best reason in the world to be monogamous. But actually, we're learning something thrilling, which is that we can, like, thrill each other. Even though we're the same people, we can change, I don't know, images,
yes,
with each other. Voyeurism is getting very big. Hmm. Some interesting things are happening. So I guess I think it's going to be okay. I think there's going to be a lot of...
Is it going to be okay or is it going to be good?
Okay.
When is it going to get good?
I think there needs to be a new kind of leadership for it to get really good. You know, we're predicting, just for fun, a Hispanic female president in the early 2000s. And the reason I think that it's really possible, is that those are the very much two underrepresented large groups. So why shouldn't that? Now, can you think of like this Hispanic female president? Can you picture what, like, the White House would be a lot more fun? And, like, we'd have margaritas, and we'd have Spanish music, and the tenor of the country would be different. And I think that Hispanics would feel much prouder about being here. Mm-hmm. And I just think, I think it would be femininely run, which is like tougher in one way and gentler in another. And it would change things. So I think the new leadership has to get in place. There's a real difference between what the uppers, I call them, the leaders, the Congress, the Senate, the President, thinks we want, and what the people want. Mm-hmm. And the uppers are repressing and pushing down hard on the people. The people are a lot more liberal and open and full of hope and belief. And the uppers are becoming judgmental.
So we're living in a world where people no longer trust the system.
No.
That's part of what I'm hearing from you. They don't trust the politician.
They don't identify with it.
And they don't identify with it. They don't feel represented by it.
And they don't aspire to it. That's what's new.
Interesting. Was that because they don't believe they can? They don't feel like they could make it happen?
They don't want it.
Yeah.
They don't want it. Who would want it?
Yeah.
If you wanted to ask me who the marketing genius of the centuries was and is, it would be Dale Carnegie.
Why is that?
He knew it all. He said, make a person feel heard. That's basically his theme.
Yes.
Listen to.
Yes.
You'll get whatever you need from that person. You don't have to do anything else but listen.
Yes.
And that's the truth, especially when you deal with children.
And you're doing that on a cultural level, because you're interviewing these 2,500 experts from all different areas. You're interviewing consumers themselves.
And then we listen to our clients. We listen to their fears, their needs. We assess their capability. We try and match what they can do with what needs to be done.
Yes.
You know, we use their culture. We may have a great idea for a company, but we'll say their culture will not allow it to happen.
Yes.
It's got to be a cultural.
Their corporate
culture.
Yeah.
It's got to be a cultural match and fit.
In terms of values and beliefs and way of doing business.
And then we look for the hero in the company.
How do you find the hero?
You know.
Yeah.
You know. It's the person that, I think most heroes are angry. And
that's
courageous.
One way to get drive, that's for sure.
It is. It's a negative way, but it works. And also a person that has an ethic, doesn't care so much about getting fired.
Because otherwise change usually happens from the outside, or somebody who's an outsider within. I remember the story about the Swiss watch manufacturers who developed the digital watch. And they looked at it, and somebody within one of the companies there, I guess, looked at it and said, what's the use of this? We make the best watches in the world. And so the Japanese took it and modeled it and have run those Casio watches and so forth up the
What about Deming,
walls?
Who went to Detroit and showed them how to do total quality and just-in-time delivery? And they said, get out of here. And he did. He went to Japan, showed them.
Yeah, he certainly did a good job. What is it about us that keeps us from wanting to create change or being willing to look at the downside potentially?
We don't want bad news. We want another bud.
Interesting. We want to immediately get out of pain.
Exactly.
Interesting. And at the same time, some people then throw their pendulum and all they can see is the pain and the problem. And is it because we wait so long till we feel overwhelmed that all of a sudden we get to that point where we don't even look for a solution?
Well, I like seeing just the pain. I think that's great. Not looking for a solution is bad. I don't mind a depressed person who's depressed for a really good reason and is willing to pull themselves out.
Yeah, by focusing on what they can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But no, when you get overwhelmed with pain, that's what cocooning's all about. You just go home and you crawl under your bed. You don't even crawl. You used to crawl under the covers in the 80s. Now you're just crawling under the bed.
Let's go back to your trends here. So you talk about, here's this society where people have got a great deal of fear about the outside world. They got a lot of pain associated to it. They worked like crazy. They said, I'm going to have this great pleasure if I just work hard enough, make enough money, make everything work. And then they were disappointed. They were disappointed economically, disappointed in the system. They're saying, my gosh, we got all these debts. So I'm going to go inside. I'm not going to go out and party like crazy. I'm going to stay internal. I'm not going to probably work out as much, or I am?
Not as much.
Not as much.
It doesn't feel good to work out, you know? As you get older, it really, you know, you have an aging population here.
What's the average age in the U.S. now? Is it close to 40?
I think it is.
Yeah, it's close to 40 years
old. Yeah. You don't feel like working. Plus, you have no time. Plus, you're in it for survival. Plus, you don't want... I mean, if anything, home gyms are doing well.
Yes.
And even for middle-class people, they always say home gyms is rich. It's not rich. Start with a step. The step costs, what, $39.95 and maybe $9.95 in some places.
Yes.
So I call that a home gym.
Right.
And also walking. You get to see some things. It's nice to walk.
So in the 80s, we ran like crazy. Then it became jogging. Then it became non-impact aerobics. And now
it's walking. And really, people walking are really drifting around. I mean, they're not doing speed walking. You notice people put on their walking gear and sort of like stroll.
But what they do is they put on something really fancy, so it feels like a fantasy adventure, right? Lumberjack shirts and something else. So you say cocooning, then you say fantasy adventure. You're saying, okay, now I want to have some pleasure without the pain. So if you can provide me with a product that lets me at home or maybe close to home have an experience of excitement, then I'm interested in that product. You're saying I need small indulgences, something that's going to make me feel good, especially when I have limited capital or I'm afraid to spend my money.
Right.
Let's talk about egonomics.
Egonomics is knowing you're a number, knowing you're in the computer somewhere, really resenting it, and being desirous of a product that makes you feel important and like it's for you. So that's custom blended cosmetics, and that's our prediction that jeans will be laser cut, you know, where they'll fit you, really fit you.
How you walk into a place?
And they'll just measure you by laser and stamp it. It's a pretty simple machine. It's there. We're also predicting custom made bicycles. Why do you have to go in and buy a bicycle and just adjust the seat? You know, maybe the pedal.
Yes.
You know, anything that talks to me as an individual. People are wearing their whole philosophies on their sweatshirts.
Yes.
They want to belong to something that's about them. That's why people who are not alcoholics still join AA, just to meet people. Hmm. Clubism. And the Nazi Party is really about egonomics. It's boosting the ego.
So do you see this as a company then? People who have companies or working for companies want to add value. If they can customize their product or service, if they can meet the person's needs and make them feel like they as an individual matter.
Exactly. They do well. Keep those 800 numbers open. Put in a 900 number. Somebody will pay to complain, which is amazing.
It doesn't keep them away, huh?
No,
but you want to hear their complaints, don't you, so you can improve things?
You want to hear their complaints, one, because that's the best way to turn someone around. Let them complain. That's 90% of it. The cure is only 10%.
Really just listening?
Just listening, yeah.
Interesting. So we talk about people needing to be recognized, not to be a number. Then we talk about the idea of cashing out. But some people have said, I'm tired of this whole system. I'm out of here. And I know I've read quite a few books about this move to what they used to call the suburbs, now the exurbs. People are going to live 100 miles, 150 miles away from town and so forth.
And then they're going to come in less and less and less.
And why is that? Why would they be able to do that?
Well, the computer lets them work at home. And they'll do that because the desire will be there.
Well, part of it, we went through an industrial age where you had to go someplace, I think you related in your book, right? Because the machines were somewhere else.
Now they're
and then
right
the information age,
table.
They used to go to the machines, and now the machine's at home.
Exactly.
You mentioned in your book you said we went through the industrial age, we went through the information age, we're going to go through the silicon chip age. What does that mean to you?
Well, that means that the machine will provide anything you need in terms of information and interaction. So much so that one of the more wild things, I don't think I put it in the book, was that you'll be able to install a chip in your own brain. You won't have to learn French. You'll be able to speak French.
Now, for some of the people who are hearing this right now, probably saying, this lady is off her rocker. I don't care if she works with IBM. I don't care with Coca-Cola, American Express, Procter & Gamble. She's crazy. I mean, we're not going to put chips in our brains and so forth. What do you say to those people that find this hard to believe?
I say, I'm crazy, but I'm right.
Tell us about some of the trends that you predicted earlier besides cocooning so that people have some references for your success rate.
Well, we predicted cocooning, as I said, in the early 80s. We said that low-fat would be the new way to eat. We said, now everybody asked me, and you probably will too, what's the trend you predicted that didn't happen?
No, I want to hear more of what you did first.
Ah, okay. Because we predicted drinking would come back, and it still hasn't, but we're seeing the start of that with that red wine idea, that red wine reduces heart disease.
Yes.
I see the start of that. Hmm. You know, drinking and driving is not good, but drinking is good. Drinking in moderation is good. Hmm. People need this. They've needed almost like a hallucinogen. They've needed this since the beginning of time, since B.C. People used to eat something on the prairie that gave them another point of view or another, you know, vision. And you can do it yourself, actually, or you can take something. So we're still saying that.
Hmm.
But some of the stuff was that we said water would be the crisis. Bottled water companies would grow.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you look at something like Evian water. You know, Evian spelled backwards, you put a mirror, is naive.
You know? Oh, but also,
you know, spend $2 for water.
But that's how scared we are. But look what it says. It says we're terrified about the water that's available.
Yeah.
And why shouldn't we be? They keep saying run the water for 2 minutes before you give your kid a drink of water. I'd rather buy a bottle. I don't want to trust that. Suppose it's not too. Suppose I run it for a minute 90. You know. So we consulted with companies that could have made water, and we said, make water, make water.
You mean bottle it?
Bottle it or create it in the lab, clean water.
Interesting. What are some of the products that you've been, I know you predicted, for example, that New Coke would fail.
Yeah,
right at
that
the time
was
coming
easy.
Out.
You don't change something that people love and think is like the American. You don't, tomorrow, if you got 10 designers into the room and you show them the American flag and you say, make this better, they could make it better. But people would go absolutely crazy. But in anybody's mind,
that's true.
People would look at the flag and say, that is nicer, but I want my flag back.
That's right.
And that's what the Coca-Cola company thought they did. They made it better, but nobody wanted it.
Yes.
So we predicted that. That was really a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
What's a prediction you're most proud of that you've made that's been successful or accurate?
Well, I hope it's the prediction that I'm making now, which is people will pull us out of this.
Hmm.
The prediction that was most accurate and influenced most products was cocooning. We said that there'll be home delivery, that there'll be holding tanks for milk and soda, that packaging will be obsolete because you're going to deliver bulk into tanks, into the home.
Hmm.
Just like you get your oil, you're going to get your milk. What do you need that container for? What do you need that can for? What do you need the kibble package for? It just pollutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a very unique way of insulating the home. And I see that as like tomorrow almost.
Yes. What are some of the other products that you've influenced in terms of...
We created Bacardi Breezers, which became the number 3 alcoholic beverage in the U.S. We created, just on our methodology that we describe in the book, brainstorming, making sure the product's on trend. It fits 10 of the 10 trends. I show you how we do that in the book. We did Pepsi AM, which we believe that people are drinking sodas in the morning. We wanted to create a soda that was... position for them and gave them what they need in terms of vitamins and caffeine in the morning.
God, I'm a health nut. You and your alcohol and your Pepsi, I'm going to come after you, my dear. But you got to represent.
Well, actually, they're proving now that caffeine, you know, they keep coming out with something different every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're saying now that caffeine could be healthy.
I think anything could be.
And a little alcohol, you know, really is a healthy thing
to
do.
Well, there are other ways to alter your state that don't
needs a lot of education.
That's true. That's true. I can't argue with that. Tell me about, going back to your group, down aging is the 6th of the trends that we talked about.
Down aging is a nostalgia trend. It says the future's scary, let's go to the past. So it's saying we want old brand names and we want to feel young. And actually, we have to change our eye. If you just say to people, what does a 50-year-old look like? They describe somebody kind of old. But when you show them that... there are some great-looking people out there that are in their 50s. So we call them the senior sensuals, and that's about down aging, about being older with more sexual and physical energy and more ideas.
Is that because more people in our culture are hitting that age that we have to deal with that?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So people who used to be, I think if I remember correctly from your book, you said people who are 40 are now going to think of themselves as 30-year-olds and portray themselves as that.
That's right.
30s or 20s,
They take off an automatic 10 to 15 when they look in the mirror. They go, I look great. And then they start to act great.
Interesting. Now, is this a counter trend to this whole concept of people thinking the future is horrible, to see themselves as being younger, more alive, more energetic?
No, it's what's going to make the future great.
Interesting.
I mean, that's part of it. Remember we said people.
Yeah.
And the older people feeling younger. Older people wearing mini skirts, older people having lots of sex and running around. It makes people, older people jumping right into a Mazda Miata, which unfortunately by the Japanese brilliant positioning, positioned to the 40-plus market. Jumping into sports cars and driving around, not feeling foolish or stupid.
Interesting. Along with this whole concept of down aging, you talk about staying alive in that focus. How does that tie in?
Staying alive is a longevity trend, you see. Again, as we're an aging population, we get over that mark and we want to live longer. So we're interested in eating right, eating foods that don't clog your arteries, thinking right. That's new in staying alive. It's meditating. It's what Bernie Siegel says about mind over body and curing disease through the right kind of thoughts. It's absolutely correct.
Sure.
It's aromatherapy. The Japanese are always already using aromatherapy in their public spaces to alter mood.
Mm-hmm.
It's about herbal medicine. It's about reflexology, acupuncture.
And the goal here is just that we want to do whatever it takes to be more healthy and be more alive, which has not been necessarily the focus in the past.
No, it was the focus in the past would be fit.
Right.
Now it's stay alive, healthier, longer.
And what made that shift?
Aging population. I think, you know, different, like you said, it's a majority's point of view.
Okay.
So if the majority was Hispanic, everything would be in Spanish. It's starting to be, by the way.
Hmm.
But it's only still 9%. If the majority is, like, aging, everything starts to, like, work on what keeps us alive longer.
Because that's the ultimate pain, potentially.
Yeah. It's just like male medicine. Most of the dollars, the research dollars, are given to male medicine. That's because the ruling bodies are all male. If they're all female, you can bet that most of the dollars would be given to female medicine. It's just a very...
Is that part of how you predict the future, is to look at the controlling forces and the demographics along with the technology that's available to them?
Demographics plus technology plus mood.
Hmm. So you do look at mood as well.
Oh, very much.
That's interesting. Now, how long does a mood last in your mind?
It can last a year. It can last 10 years.
What changes it? We get enough pain that we finally say, I've had it?
Sometimes we want to jump out of it. It hurts too much. Sometimes we get a leader like a Kennedy that convinces us of another, or a Roosevelt, that there's another way.
You see any leaders like that on the...
Absolutely not.
Boy, this is an encouraging conversation. You make me want to stamp my foot down to the cave and say, I got to turn this thing around.
Maybe you will. You see, that's what we think. We think somebody like you, even, you know, somebody that's not politically trained particularly, will start to coalesce votes. Can't you see a ticket with Gloria Steinem and Ralph Nader run together?
That would be fascinating.
You see, the country, in Gloria's book, I hope you're going to interview her, about self-esteem.
Yes.
The country needs some self-esteem. Self-esteem is not only a female issue or an individual issue. It's a universal issue.
Yeah, we were talking before we went on tape about the idea of losing your job to save the spotted owl versus losing your job.
Oh, yeah. When a logger loses his job to save the spotted owl, he feels bad. He's mad. He's furious. He pressures his legislature. But there's a certain pride there that he lost his job, not because things were screwed up or we failed, but some good was being, he was sacrificed to the greater good.
He can justify it.
It's like Johnny Goes Marching to War that he believes in.
Yes.
He feels good about his family, feels ready, may be dead. They feel terrible. They miss him. They're angry. They're bitter. But there's a pride. When you lose your job in Detroit because the big three screwed up, because they didn't catch up, because they didn't keep up, because they didn't run the company as well, because they didn't care, because they just took their big paychecks and they let the line worker get fired, it's a very different way of losing your job. And there's tremendous anger and there's shame. Hmm. It's quite different, and it is the same action, right? You lose your job.
Yeah.
But how you lose it.
Well, it's the meaning. I think in any human experience, it's not what happens. It's the meaning we take from it that's going to shape
Absolutely.
Our future actions and beliefs. Tell me, how does this tie into the vigilante consumer? I think that's your eighth trend.
Well, the vigilante consumer is a consumer that's saying, I feel screwed. I'm buying products that don't work. I'm overpaying. I'm not getting, and I'm mad. And they're using their dollars to pressure companies to do the right thing.
Like they did with tuna, for example, when
that
the dolphin
was
situation.
Kids, really, basically, but yes.
Was that really kids?
It was kids that wrote in.
Wow.
And it was the first idea that we had, that this idea of the Children's Crusade, where kids would coalesce. Mainly kids wrote in and said to Tony Riley at Heinz, stop. And he did. The vigilante consumer is, it's a consumer that says, I want to see who's running this company. And I want to know, you know, gee, if those running shoes are made in a Chinese prison camp, I don't want them. So where does this company dispose of its garbage? How does it? How does it treat its women and children? Does it have child care, flex time, flex benefits? And I'm going to make my vote. We call it Product Plus. Product, the centerpiece, has to work, has to be great. The plus is the aura or the soul, corporate soul we call it, wrapped around it. And that plus is going to be a new way to market products and will be rated. It will be rated in the future.
Wow.
You're seeing
that
already.
Makes sense. Yeah, that makes
in
sense.
In Shopping for a Better World, 750,000 copies of this little pamphlet that rates companies based on apartheid and garbage and all the stuff I'm mentioning.
Yes.
So it's here.
Now, what has made that shift in our society, you think, that's taken us from just buying what we think is the best product to really being conscious about the impact? Is it just the fear and the pain of what's happening in society as a whole?
Yeah, it's almost the only power we have. We have supermarket power. We don't have any political power. Are you kidding? I mean, we don't even feel that anything we want we can vote for. That's why people don't bother to vote half the time. They don't believe. Because between one candidate and another, they're both bad. So they don't believe anything. But they do believe that if they stop buying tuna fish, a guy may have to pay attention.
And they're right.
They are right.
And they've got evidence of it. Tell me, you said in your book something that I thought was quite interesting. You said that we will only take so much pessimism, we'll only take so much pain before we do something and turn it around. And my metaphor earlier about stomping in the cave is kind of a metaphor I use often, that I think during the worst times in human history, when things get bad enough, somebody, whether it's stomping their foot in the cave or doing something as a consumer or doing something politically or whatever it takes, human beings seem to, I believe, at their worst, finally find the best inside themselves and they make the change happen. You seem to share that belief with me. What do you think, you know, is going to make that happen here? Do you think it'll happen here? What kind of timeline do you perceive it happening, where people are finally getting fed up enough? Or is this really that process? Are people getting fed up and they're just putting their foot down with products, putting their foot down in various areas? What's your overall belief there?
I think it's the process. I think we're in the middle of it.
Okay.
I think women are starting to, I see it already, women are starting to group together. Not like they did in the 70s or the 60s, but they're realizing they're a strong, healthy vote, and they're starting to talk to each other and decide not so much about what they're going to vote on, but what they really want for themselves and for their kids. And they're going to start to pressure through their grocery list and through their vote the powers that be to get more women in Senate to make the right decisions for them.
Interesting.
They're starting to write checks.
Tell me about 99 Lives. When I read this chapter, I saw my own life immediately in front of me. Tell me, what is 99 Lives all about as a trend?
99 Lives is about just feeling overpowered. You know, you have your portable phone, you have your portable fax. You're trying to raise your kids, you're trying to go to work. You're trying to go to church, synagogue. You're trying to, I don't know, be a great lover. You're trying to, like, look good. Isn't that a little too much to try?
Yeah.
So people are like flipping out. I mean, you can't even say the check's in the mail, the letter's in the mail. You say, put it on the fax. I mean, it's this immediacy of time. I have a cartoon in one of my seminars of this kid standing in front of the microwave, and he says, 2 minutes? I thought you said it was instant.
Yes. It's interesting to see people in America on the telephone after you've been to some place like Fiji, and, you know, they call and they don't get an immediate response. They get all angry and upset. You know, we've lost track here.
Right.
That's interesting. Well, my interpretation of 99 Lives was just that we're trying to do so many things at once that we're creating more stress than is necessary. My view is that comes down to a management. You've got to have some management systems.
And you've got to give something up.
And you've got to give things up. So that's what streamlining's about, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you done that? Yes.
Are you on trend in that area?
I have so much time. I annoy so many people. I just have total time. I only do what gets me really to the goal, and the rest of the time I wonder what I should do.
So what's the question you asked yourself to help streamline what you're doing? What do I enjoy most? What has the most impact?
What do I want out of my life at the end?
Yes.
And what do I do every day to get there?
That's very nice. Very nice. The last of the 10 trends is SOS, Save Our Society. Let's talk about that one.
Three E's, ethics, environment, and education. A real concern that education in the country is lousy, but yet hopefully, and this is very hopeful, there is an increase in applications to teaching schools. Hmm. So people are starting to see teaching as a revered profession. You see, people are just standing up and doing the right thing all by themselves. Nobody told them to do that.
Yeah.
We say in the seminar, invite a teacher home for dinner. Start to make them feel good. It's going to save your country, save your kids.
Yeah.
So that's education. We say put more money into it, you know. Environment is a complex issue because just because something's biodegradable depends on where it's buried. I mean, it's real complex. I think companies and the government have got to take hold of that. It's too hard for the individual.
Yeah.
They can separate their garbage, but that's about it. They can buy from the right companies, but that's about it. And ethics. Ethics is teaching your kids not to lie. And, you know, it's a really great thing with kids staying at home, parents staying at home, and then kids seeing their parents at home. There's much more of a direct one-on-one ethical upbringing in the American family.
You think that's happening? We have two income families in the majority of the population now. Do you see that happening because of the home office environment,
yes,
meaning we're going to be there? What's it going to do to relationships? Are people going to get driven crazy because they're never leaving that little box of theirs? Is their worldview going to be limited? What's your view as far as that's concerned?
I think they're going to love it. I think they're on vacation.
How many people right now currently have home offices or work out of their home?
Well, there's 450,000 just last year, but it's millions now.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of people, you'll notice people start on the weekends. Do you notice that people are finding a little corner where they can, like, have their stuff.
Yes.
And their little computer and fool around.
Yes.
And then they think Sunday night, that horrible night, it's the worst night of the week. And why is it the worst night of the week? Because many Americans are going to a job Monday morning they don't want to go to. First we had to go to school. We didn't want to do that. We didn't do our homework. We were depressed. Now we have to go to a job we don't want. So they're thinking, like, how can I stay here? I want to stay here.
And the so home, it seems like if you're building homes, it might be smart to have a separate entrance with an office exterior.
It might be, or like, you know, an attic space that could be converted.
Yeah.
And they're doing that for elderly parents that may be moving in. Some of the good builders are doing that already. They'll put a raw space in just in case you change your mind and you want to expand.
Interesting. Tell me, what, as you look over the last, let's say, three decades, what do you think was the focus of the 70s? Because you started in 74, right?
Right.
Everybody had gloom and doom. I remember I talked with Paul Pilser, the economist, and he was talking about how the Club of Rome was saying the whole world's going to run out of oil in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And on and on and on and on. But nobody predicted the computer chip. You know, nobody predicted you'd have something like fuel injection. Nobody predicted more efficiency.
And then the 80s was a decade of greed.
Is that a fair representation? I hear that so often. I wonder if that's overgeneralization, doesn't talk about all the good things that happened as well.
I just think we worshipped, as a country, the dollar. No matter, even if we were doing something great.
Well, the money was the way to get out of pain and into pleasure.
Yeah. And the 60s was the idealistic decade.
Yes.
Where we really thought we were going to save the world, and were we wrong?
So we got so much pain we gave up?
We got so much pain we went into vinyl. I mean, we we did.
So. Oh, interesting. So let's see if I've got an accurate picture here. We've got a society of people that fear the future. They fear the outside world, so they come inside to their cocoon. They try to create an environment they can control, because we all want a sense of certainty. With certainty, we can avoid pain and gain pleasure. So in this little environment with our family and hopefully with the right electronic toys for entertainment so nobody gets bored, we live in a place where we get as much fantasy adventure as we can. We indulge in small things that can make us feel good during tough times. We gravitate towards companies that meet our personal needs and make us feel like we have an identity and that we're somebody special. We potentially, if we can, cash out the whole system and maybe move out to an environment where people recognize us and know who we are and we have relationships. We keep reminding ourselves that we're really not that old, because in today's culture, everybody else is our age. We work hard to stay alive and eat all the right things. We use our economic power to, because we don't think we have any political power, to tell people how it's going to be and shape our society. We try to figure out how to maybe downsize or streamline, rather, so we don't have so many lives going on simultaneously, but we still secretly want it all. And we work hard to make a difference in society because we realize that all the focus on just the me decade sure didn't make the world better, and that hurts me and everybody else. Is that a good summary?
Good sum up.
So the companies that are going to succeed in the future are those that can understand that future and create products that really help people to meet those internal needs, to overcome their fears, to relieve their anxieties, to make them feel special, to support their family, and to help them have a stronger relationship and pride in their relationship with the consumer, saying this is a conscious company.
Yeah, and one maybe one more thing, which
yes.
is that the companies that respect the people they're selling to.
Very important. Very important.
Self-esteem. I think that's going to be the watchword.
Did you see the cover of Newsweek a few weeks back?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, the cover said, what's wrong with self-esteem or something like that. No, it was the curse of self-esteem. What's wrong with the feel-good movement?
Oh, they're so glib.
Yes.
Self-esteem is a tough thing. It's looking inside and finding something really good about yourself to respect.
So when you look inside, where does that self-esteem come from in you?
It comes from the way I've taken care of people. Here in my company and in the companies we work for.
Yes.
Purely that. That's the only thing that's really important.
Yeah. But what's an example of how you take care of your people? Or something you're proud of that you do for people?
I try and recognize them as people when they come in every day. When I first started, I was so scared that how is I going to pay the rent, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That I saw everybody in the company as a means to paying the rent, to staying alive.
Yeah.
Now when people come and I think, how are they really feeling? And that brain reserve is just a place, I mean, we have to do something, so we advise people about the future. But it's really a place where some people can gather to feel maybe good or advance them in their own lives. Or I wonder, like I'm starting to think about, like we have a, you know, a lot of people that are pregnant here.
Yeah.
Well, we have almost 95% women here.
Yeah.
So I start to think about, like, what are we going to do for their kids? how we're going to interpret some of these big themes about childcare here, like a little mini lab.
Yeah.
And I really feel that we're just a place where I've been given a certain amount of people, not that many, like 30, to show up every day. But maybe the 30 influence 30 who influence 30. You know, maybe we can change their thinking a little bit.
Yeah.
But I really feel this in a big way, and it's even more difficult when you think about changing the thinking of the big American companies. There have been less successful. It's hard because they come with very many beliefs of what cannot be done.
Convictions.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Can't be done. Can't be done.
You have a note on your desk or a little plaque that says...
Says it can be done.
Yeah, but that's my philosophy as well. I love it.
Yeah. I guess I think there's so much the individual really can do. It's so much you can do.
I think that's a theme that I want to make sure we leave people with, because trends are not people. Trends are groups of people. And that, you know, our society has been defined, I think, and agree with me or disagree with me, by individuals who've taken a stand, who've made a commitment and said, I'm not going to go in the same direction as the wave. I'm going to create a new pathway, a new focus, a new direction. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And I also think that people don't think about enough about their own funeral. See, I spend time thinking about my funeral.
Boy, this has been an optimistic conversation. I'll tell you what.
Who's going to be there? What they're going to say?
Right.
I hope they don't write on my gravestone the person that thought of cocooning, you know?
Well, this is the question I always ask at the end of my interview. She led into it perfectly. And that is, how do you want to be remembered, Faith Popcorn?
She changed things for the better.
Mm, very nice. And how did she do it?
The right way.
In what way is that?
You know, without sacrificing self-esteem, without sacrificing people, without hurting anybody.
Yeah.
You know, a gentle shove to the right or up.
Yes.
You know, I think women are very, very good at that.
Yes.
I think men are becoming more, you know, recognizing their gentler, sweeter souls and throwing this yoke off of the provider. Oh, it's so unhealthy.
Yeah.
And I think women are realizing their strength in that way. And those are the people, men and women and children, that can pull the country and the world up.
A balance. We've thrown our pendulum one direction. Maybe that's what happens when we get enough pain. I think, you know, when people succeed, they party. When they fail, they ponder. And
maybe it's good to fail for a while.
Yeah, maybe we'll think a lot more. We'll dig a little deeper. And maybe that's part of what society is designed.
We've been sent to our room as a country.
Okay, well, while we're there, we need to not only do some thinking, but take some action.
Right.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So tell me, where will I find Faith Popcorn in the future? In the year, if we're sitting down here, and we've been friends for a decade here, which I hope will be true, and we're sitting down here 10 years from now, what will you be doing?
I hope I'm going to be able to get people voting for the right thing.
Mm.
Now, that implies a political aspiration, which I do not have.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to run for something to get people voting for the right thing.
Right.
And I don't mean voting in terms of going to the polls. I don't believe in that. I mean, like, getting them together to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I hope I can really help with that, you know? That's why I said at the end of the book, like, you know, call me or write me. I mean, a lot of crazy people called me, people that were interested in themselves, but some wonderful people. You know, called. People want, like, they love Ralph. They love Ralph. I think Ralph Nader is one of the most beautiful people in the world. I don't know him.
Yeah.
But he's good because he's good.
Yeah, he's doing the right thing.
You know? And I thought it was brave of Gloria Steinem to come forward and say all these years she wasn't so together.
Yeah.
She had problems. And give advice based on her own discomfort and pain.
Yeah. What are the three most empowering beliefs that you have about the future that give you hope and faith and that you'd want to pass on to other people?
Take care of other people without looking to self-gain.
That'll give you self-esteem.
Oh, definitely.
Without a doubt.
Definitely.
Without a doubt.
Do something big, bigger than you think you could ever, ever do. You know, like get people together or pressure someone in the government or leave someone that's bad for you or get someone that's good for you. Do something really big.
Yeah, because people don't get inspired by small plans.
No, no. I guess the third one is do something for your planet.
Mm, that's pretty big. Do you think in our society that we're going to start taking more responsibility or pointing more fingers? I see a lot of that with lawsuits and people blaming their parents.
Yeah. I think we're taking more responsibility because the pointing fingers doesn't get us anywhere. It really doesn't make us feel better.
Yeah.
And maybe with all the people you have subscribing to your various output, I think that you can move a lot of people. And if you, you know, don't get bought off.
I don't think so.
I hope not.
No. I'm very clear on my values.
Good.
Yeah, very clear. Very clear. What are three questions, these threes I keep giving you, but I'm curious, what are three questions you ask on a regular basis that have shaped who you are, and what do you think it really takes for you, or what has made you really a successful influencer in our culture?
Well, I don't think I'm successful.
How will you know when you are?
Start there. I'll know I'm successful when more people really believe and listen.
Mm-hmm. What will it take to get more people to do that?
Maybe I need more case histories. I don't know. When I started, I had no case histories. And I got to get some case histories, you know?
Right.
Some proof. Like,
yes.
Music, go prove it.
Yes.
What's your question?
What are three questions that you ask on a regular basis?
Are you happy? I ask this of all people and myself.
Interesting.
Then I say, why? And make sure they're good, you know, good reasons.
There's some references there.
Yeah. And are you helping people? Are you helping your planet? Are you helping your... you know, the things you care about, are you contributing? Are you just showing up? Are you just showing up? Or are you being there?
Yeah.
Stop just showing up. You know, you get so tired sometimes you just appear. And somebody really annoyed me by saying showing up is 90% of it. They learn that being an executive. I think that's so terrible.
Oh, that's funny.
And maybe that's the problem. Everybody's just showing up and nobody's being there. But I noticed that when you're doing this interview, because you've done a lot of interviews, and it's very easy to get glazed over, you know, and just like sort of like ask the questions, and nobody hears you on this tape particularly much. You don't, so you could just be asking the questions. People send producers to do these interviews,
yes,
you know.
I know.
But you're here. You haven't just shown up. And I think it's really important to be here because I don't think that I would have answered these questions in the same way if you just showed up.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I'm very interested. I'm fascinated.
It's very obvious.
And,
I think you're fascinated with everything you do.
I am. I'm curious. I think that there's an emotional state for us to cultivate as human beings to be happy. It's to be curious. I think when people say they're bored, I say, no, you're boring. There's a difference.
Yeah.
You know? Because there's nothing to be bored about.
To be bored about.
Just so much stimulation. I look around at our culture, and I think that some of the trends you talk about, I would definitely concur with. Others I question, but who am I? I have to ask my own questions also. And I would say the majority of them I do, my question immediately becomes, how am I going to live my life? How am I going to influence other people to live their life? Are these really the ways to get out of pain and create pleasure long term? Is cocooning really the whole answer? And I personally see things as moving in themes and times. I think, you know, there's night and there's day. They're all the seasons. And I think we're going to go through that in our moods. But I personally believe that no matter what the environment is, you can be living in your fall on a consistent basis if you're also simultaneously planting as if it were spring. If you're always working to improve the quality of your life, if you're practicing what Deming taught the Japanese, they call it Kaizen, I call it Kanai, constant, never-ending improvement, then the quality of your life is not tied to society's. The quality of your life is determined by the quality of your thinking, the quality of your emotion, the quality of your contribution, the quality of your focus, the quality of your action, the quality of your discipline. And I think there are ways to do that that are balanced still. We are not just outside, but you're really balanced between the internal world and the external world, where you're making a difference in your own life and your family, and you're touching the world. That's the theme I'd want to share with people. And I think understanding some of the trends, though, of society is necessary to have that kind of impact. Because unless we understand that people are afraid, that people are cocooning, that people are looking at a situation of how to get out of the current system, unless we understand that, we can't influence and positively support people in those environments. And that's really my goal in meeting you.
I think that's really interesting. I'm very flattered. Well, I want to say that one of the best things that came out of this book is maybe the opportunity to do a TV show, like a syndicated show. I've been talking to a couple of people about it, because I think I could bring people forward.
Yes.
People like you.
Yes.
Or you could do a show. I mean, bring people forward that maybe the everyday person doesn't see, people that I think symbolize the future.
Yes.
You know, in the last 2 minutes of all these interviews, I get very, you know, you get tired and you're on your book tour and people say, you know, who's going to run for president and who's going to win?
Yeah.
I say a dolphin will win. And I usually say it about 5 seconds before they're out of there and they go, oh, that was Faith Popcorn talking about the future. But I do think a dolphin's going to win. You know, dolphins are wonderful. They smile. They're, you know, fat. They're gentle. They're smart. They're strong.
So it'll be a dolphin characteristics. Is
paradigm,
what
soul, yes, of one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Tell me if there's one thing that you've carried throughout your entire life that's really been a guiding principle for you that gives you joy even in tough times. What is that?
I'll survive.
Hmm. Core belief.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My grandmother told me. And I really, you know, when somebody tells you at a very young age, you're going to be okay, you'll survive, you'll get through this, nothing can get you down, nothing can defeat you, nothing. You know?
Yeah.
She told me some of my teachers were wrong. You know how when you're a kid, everybody tells you your teachers are right when they're wrong? When I said cowgirl, we had no, our family was extremely unusual. What most people believe, we didn't, you know? Mm. We just didn't believe what was fed to us by the big mills, you know, by the big beliefs. We didn't believe it. We said, no, we don't believe it. Some of it was true, actually, and we didn't believe it, and some of it wasn't. But I think it allowed you to, like, question all the stuff that's given to you to believe. And I think it also got you to focus on the fact that as an individual, you can survive. And you can take a few people with you, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, Nazi Germany, a lot of people saved a lot of Jews. They took a lot of people with them.
Yeah.
They survived, and they decided not to do it alone, to, like, save a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are capable of great things.
No question. No. Let me ask you the final question, the real soft, simple one. Okay. What's the purpose of life?
The purpose of life is to make things better.
Ah, I would have to concur with you on that. And hopefully some of your trend prediction and your distinctions, and I think also not just your distinctions, but your caring. Hopefully some of that came through on this tape.
I hope maybe
it'll help people live a little better life.
That would make me really happy.
Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.